Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline. In this Back Issue Spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Thor 7 through 14. James, how you doing tonight?
I am fantastic. How are you doing, John?
I am doing well. Now, this is a little bit of a longer stretch of issues than we usually do. It's 8. Normally, we're trying to stay a little closer to 6. But this was right on the heel. We've done the first 6 issues of this series.
Yes.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a fan of this, right?
Oh, I'm a big fan of it. Just slightly.
I can totally understand that and stuff. I thought the first 6 issues when we did that as a Back Issue Spotlight were fun, but I couldn't tell where it was going to go. And then it's interesting because we've got a 2-part story here and then a 6-part story and such. And overall, I mean, definitely this is a quality title. There's no two ways about that. Still not sure if it's one that I'm going to get on.
Really? I have not convinced you, or I should say Donny Cates has not convinced you to re-jump on it.
He has not. And when we get to the start of the 6-part story, I think we'll get into a little of why on that.
Oh, okay. Me, Jason Aaron was one of my favorite runs of Thor, and so I was so... I loved it. You know, he was on the title for probably 7 years, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Simonson, I love his Thor, too. And then I was so depressed when Jason Aaron's leaving, and then Donny Cates picked it up. And I've been having a lot of fun. I've been noticing a trend with things he does with his books, and I'm noticing it here, too. But it's stuff that I like.
Well, I think part of it for me with Thor is it's a character that can be a lot of fun. I've certainly enjoyed it a lot over the decades I've read it. But there are other times where it's just hard for me to relate to, because either they go a little too deep on the Asgardian stuff, or there was a period... I want to say in the 80s, possibly the 90s, where it was a fairly long run by the well-known creator TBD, to be determined, and I swear every month the solicit read, we'll figure it out before it ships.
That's pretty horrible, yeah.
And it was just inventory story after inventory story after inventory story, and they weren't bad stories, but that's like no way to make a run.
No, you're right. And the part with Thor, when I do not like reading Thor, it's when they get into the old English almost that they use, the thee and thou, and, you know, he starts talking different. And of course, Thor talks a little bit different being a god and being Asgardian, but it seems like current writers, they take a little bit of that out. I guess you would call it old English is what they use. And that just drives me nuts when they do that.
I think there's a way to do it that adds character, and there's a way to do it that just gets annoying and lacks almost accessibility.
Yeah, and if they do it wrong, it really rubs me the wrong way, and I'm done with the title. I don't want to read it.
And I think that's one of the challenges I've got. And there's also something about this kind of a title that, in addition to the these and the thous, the type style they sometimes use is a little more flourishy or whatever, that it's just a little harder to read than I like. There are times where it's, okay, you want to do something crazy with the lettering and stuff to really show the otherworldliness or the godliness or whatever, the differentness.
Yeah.
And there comes a point of, I just want to read the story. Quit going to all these crazy fonts and stuff.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Because right when you said that, I was on basically the first issue we're going to be reviewing. And it's issue number 7, and we see Lady Sif. And it's not annoying, but it's slight. They changed the font a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, okay, we don't need that, but they want you to know it's an Asgardian speaking, like we don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and when we get to Beta Ray Bill there, and he's like, Your Highness and stuff, that particular font is one that you can tell that the one he's using and the one Thor's using is, I don't know if it's the same font or a little different or whatever, because like the E in Highness, the two bottom bars almost kind of blur together.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
The bar on the H for in the two H's in Highness are kind of low and stuff. And there's an aspect where it's my failing eyesight, I know this. But, I mean, you know, work with me, guys.
It's, you know, it's good to hear you say that, because I was posting on the Slack channel. I've been reading Batman Hush, and I was reading just a trade paperback. And so it's a little bit smaller, I think, than even a comic. And they were using some blue font in there. And with the gutter loss and everything, I'm like, I couldn't read half of the little text boxes when they get in the middle. It's so annoying. But I know what you mean with this comic. It's something like that. Failing eyesight. Don't make it difficult to read. Make it easy to read. Make it something we can all understand. Just tell us they're Asgardian, you know, whatever.
Oh, and if you want to do a little, you know, funness on the border of the word balloon or whatever, I can deal with that. But it's gotta be there for a reason. And when they start doing things like, you know, red text on a black background or blue text on a background where it's visually hard to read, you're putting a very real barrier between me and the story that I've gotta get through to get to the story.
That's frustrating. I can understand that.
It's crazy annoying.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is, like, when we were talking about doing, you know, reading the next arc of Thor, because you had enjoyed it, and you said, I'm like, hey, let's check out the second one. And I'm like, oh, let's go 7 through 12, because that would have been six issues. Little did I know that 7 and 8 would be, like, a two-issue thing that kind of tied into what's going on, but it's actually 9 through 14, which is the six-issue arc. So that's why I went to eight issues, but the 7 and 8 I thought were kind of fun, and I think it's going to be something that they're going to have to really touch into again, even more so, some of the stuff they put in here.
Absolutely, and I think there were parts of it here that are definitely playing on the history of the characters, particularly between Thor and Iron Man.
Yeah.
You know, when the Thor, his hammer's there, and it's got, you know, call Tony Stark at this number. One, I feel sorry for whoever has that number in real life, if somebody does.
Yeah.
And two, that was just kind of hilarious, because there was a point where, and I forget which story it was in, they needed to get a message to Thor or whatever, so, you know, somebody gave, you know, Tony a Sharpie, and he just scrawled it on the hammer. It's like, dude, you don't do that to the guy's hammer. That's just not cool. He's not going to like it. And this is, again, kind of the payback for that.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was a nice little callback there. Super cool. It was funny. Just seeing Tony freaking out. That is not cool, you son of a... And it just bleeps it out.
Well, and we actually get a little payoff on this a couple issues down the line when he's changed the number.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. I like that. There's definitely comedy in here.
Yeah, I mean, there was parts of this two-part story that were a little bit of payoff from the first arc we read, and setting up stuff in the next arc we're going to read, you know? So I like when they use continuity in a good way, and that's something I think Donny Cates is just doing a very brilliant job with this title.
Really is. I mean, he doesn't drop threads. Bendis was notorious for doing that. He'd have cool ideas, but sometimes he'd build a thread, and then it would never end. You'd never see closure on it, and it'd be frustrating. And I don't really see that with Donny Cates. So when he puts something in there, he has callbacks to it. You know, just like the strain between Beta Ray Bill and Thor, you know, with Stormbreaker and everything that happened. You know, he's tying into that again and going back to that and dealing with that issue, not just whitewashing the whole topic. So I thought that was really kind of cool.
Yeah, I like the interplay between those two and how that was all going on and kind of in parallel with what was going on with Iron Man and such.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's kind of cool that I think what Donny does, his little, I don't know if you call it like his thing, but what he's really good at, he takes a character and he actually tries to come up with something a little bit original that someone hasn't done, where we've seen other people pick up the hammer. And we've seen, you know, Thor not be able to pick up the hammer in the Jason Aaron run. He kind of meshed those two together, and where people are able to pick up the hammer, and it's getting more and more difficult for Thor to lift the hammer. And so he's kind of melding the two things together into one story, which I like. And he takes some, you know, tacks and directions that I don't see other writers taking.
Well, it's also clear, though, that he's read Thor for quite some time, or at least quite a bit of it. I don't know. He could be brand new to it and just, you know, power read through the entire run. I don't know. But he's familiar with places like Broxton, Oklahoma. Yep. And, again, what's going on in the past, so he can play off those moments, which, if you're familiar with them, works great, and if you're not, it doesn't really, it's not inaccessible or anything.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to know about the stuff that happened in Oklahoma, but if you've been reading the title for a long time, it's kind of a cool callback for you, a little Easter egg for you. And I like it when writers do that, because sometimes, especially when it comes to DC stuff, you'll see Easter eggs that it's something there for you, a longtime reader. But it, when it doesn't ruin the story for me, I'm cool with it. I don't mind. And then you fill me in.
Yeah, if it's something where you get an added layer into the story because you've got some knowledge from longtime reading and stuff, that's great. It only becomes a problem when there's not that surface layer for readers without that additional knowledge and they get lost. That's where it becomes problematic.
Exactly, yeah.
And like the end of this first issue here, great reveal, fun moment, and one that if you get the basic gist of Thor's hammer and all that stuff, that's all you need to know to understand this moment.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you've read the past stories, it's like there's other times we've seen riffs on this with, you know, at least four or five other characters.
Correct.
So it's like, okay, this is continuing along what's been established before. Maybe we'll go in a new direction here.
Yeah, definitely. I like that. And another thing that I've been kind of noticing with the Thor run particularly, similar to BKV, Brian K. Vaughan, he and The Why the Last Man, he ended with a good cliffhanger, something that made you want to keep reading. Oh, I want to read that next issue. And I think Cates does a really good job of that. You know, you get that little reveal, wow, I want to read the next issue and find out what's going on.
And again, this is a reveal, not a cliffhanger.
Correct, a reveal.
Yeah. And it was a cool one. This is a fun moment. I want to see what happens next.
Yeah, something to really juice the story up, and you're like, wow, this is cool. Let me read the next issue. And that's how I felt when I was reading the single. So even though I would say the stories are written for a trade today, he's respecting the single issue reader and giving us something that amps you up and jogs my memory. As soon as I opened up that next issue, I remember that reveal or that what happened.
Well, and ending on that kind of a moment where it's something that catches your attention at the end and is rememberable when you get to that next issue a month later or whatever, that's really good storytelling.
Yes, and that's what I like about this. It's really good storytelling throughout the issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought this two-parter was just a lot of fun. It was going in, you know, an interesting direction, and it's one that it's like, yeah, I've seen stuff like this before, but that's fine. I don't need it to be something I've never seen before if it's fun and entertaining.
Exactly.
And then when this issue 8 kind of opens with, you know, Thor's, I guess, grandfather tried to get to, you know, advanced knowledge by looking at that Book of the Kings or whatever it was, as did his father, as did Thor. It's like there's certain cycles that repeat.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And I honestly think there's that little text box where Thor's actually looking at the book.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are stories that Donnie's going to touch on. I don't think he just put them in there, you know, haphazardly, because he talks about the golden shadow, the lightning that walks, you know, the king and the stone, and the second god of lies. And
yeah.
When I got to that, and I remembered, I was like, I think those other three things are going to be story arcs in here.
Well, if you've got a writer who's got a game plan and gets the time to let that game plan play out,
yeah,
you can get some really cool stuff.
Exactly. And the first time reading this, I didn't know that. I probably just read it. But going through it a second time, I was like, oh, he's actually touching on this stuff, and that's really cool.
Well, that's the difference between, you know, foreshadowing and telegraphing.
Exactly, yeah.
When you do it on a second read, you can pick some stuff up because you've got later context, whereas while he's putting it out there in plain sight and planting the seeds, it's not so blatant as, well, of course he's going to go this way.
Exactly. So he's very clever. I think it's nice that he put it in there, and so there's a reward to a reader if you want to read it a second time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of cool. But I did like that opening.
Yeah, it just had some fun stuff, you know? And the fact that this is also not too dissimilar to the discovery of Thor's hammer in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is kind of a nice moment, too, because it makes this a little more accessible to the wider audience versus, you know, people who've read Thor for decades or something.
Yeah, it feels familiar, even though it's something new that I'm reading. So mm-hmm. It feels very familiar to me, and to you, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And again, the interplay between Thor and Iron Man was just a fun stuff.
Yeah, and when you get to that fight scene
mm-hmm.
with the hammer to the face, when I just saw the reaction, that was just amazing. I loved it. Very clever.
Yeah. Yeah, nice double page splash there, and it's going to be interesting to see if either Donny Cates or some other writer kind of goes back to this and plays it out further down the line.
Exactly. And just the wit that was in there, you know, at the end of the day, basically you're just a tin man in a lightning storm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You win, well, basically.
In the panel, because there's this, you know, hammer-sized scorch mark on the earth, you know, with fire all around it, and they're in the center of it and such. And it's like, kind of, you know, I didn't hit you, but I coulda.
Yeah. This could end very badly for you, Tin Man.
Yeah, that's kind of along the lines of, I forget if it was Blazing Saddle or which. Oh, he's a really bad shot. He hadn't hit us yet. He's hit everything he's aimed at.
Yeah.
You know?
Very true.
So, I'm curious where some of the stuff is going to go and stuff. I thought the full-page splash with Thor and the other guy, I forget his name, that was just fun.
A lot of fun. And his name was something Aziz, I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But what was clever is he's a mechanic or something, you know, and he's basically saying, hey, if something doesn't work, you shut it down. And that's the entire premise, the build-up for the next arc, for the next issue, which is why you got to read these two issues. You can't just skip over it and, oh, let's pick up at 8 or at 9 and go forward. Because when I read that, I was like, how's he going to turn off his hammer? But Thor's like, no, I'm going to turn myself off.
Well, this is one that serves these two parts as a little bit of an interlude between the first arc and the next.
Yep.
A fun story in and of itself. A callback to the history, a touch point to, you know, Iron Man and the Avengers and stuff. With this other guy, Adam or whatever, getting the power for a little bit, it's calling back to other characters. And we saw one of them, like Beta Ray Bill and stuff, and Eric Masterson, and Red Norville and Jane Foster, who'd also gotten the power through similar, you know, hey, they've got the hammer now.
Yep.
All of that, I think, was nice to prime the pump for that next story.
I agree. Really cool. And there were so many callbacks and nods to what's come before that there was a lot of respect here given to Simonson, given to Jason Aaron, and everyone else that's written the stories.
Well, and to the readers, it's you've read this and now there's payoff.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, it's not that there has to be future payoff for any story to matter. If it's a good read, that's in and of itself enough. But when you've done this kind of storytelling like he's doing, it really makes it feel worthwhile to stay on the title for a while.
Exactly, yeah. So he's hooked me as a reader because just the respect he's given to the other things, the respect he's given to me as a long-time reader of Thor, and he makes it a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on board fully.
So this next issue, number 9, starts the 6-part arc.
Yeah.
Which overall I thought was a lot of fun.
Me too.
But it kind of has an aspect of the story that I just, it's part and parcel critical to the story, I just don't buy.
Okay. Go into that.
Okay. They do a little bit of a recap on how Odin created this Dr. Blake, Donald Blake persona for Thor to basically turn him into Thor into a better man and teach him a little humility and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay, that's part and parcel of the origin of Thor. Granted, originally the readers were on the Donald Blake side and thought he became Thor, not the other way around.
Yep.
And I'm not sure I really like the idea that they go with here, that Donald Blake is this other entity than Thor.
That's what I was curious how you would feel about that and how people would feel, because it almost feels like it's being rewritten or a retcon of everything that I've felt up until now.
I feel it's definitely a retcon.
Yeah.
It was used well.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, the less sense it makes.
Yeah, because I always saw it as Thor basically, you know, undercover.
Well, it's like asking where Peter Parker goes when he's Spider-Man. He's right there.
He's right there. So what Donnie did here, and I kind of wrote it down, he's like, basically Thor goes to the Elder Sleep to commune with the spirits of the dead kings. And Donald Blake comes from almost like this perfect, what was described to us as a perfect world, you know, a place where the sun never sets and it almost looks like a 50s neighborhood. You walk around, everything's perfect, all the neighbors know each other. But then he comes to Earth, and Thor goes to the Elder Sleep. But that's never been set up, so this is complete retcon. This is Donny Cates. I don't know if it's going to be like this forever. I don't know how they can change it back now.
I don't know that they should change it back.
Yeah, I don't.
Because I think where this story ends up is interesting.
Very.
But this whole question of where does Donald Blake go, to me, was not a valid question. I mean, it's playing up Thor and Donald Blake kind of like it was Rick Jones and Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And the thing is there were two different guys that were bound together with the Negabands. One would switch places with the other or something. That's never how it was with Donald Blake. What this issue does is establish that Odin, granted, he's a god, and, you know, an all-father god, so a powerful god. He created this, I mean, I'm not entirely sure what Odin really did. He created this Donald Blake thing that's sentient, has its own memories, its own life or whatever. And it's like, okay, Odin's a god, sure, he could do all of that. But it goes back to my question of, if Donald Blake is this other thing, what was Odin expecting this was going to do for Thor?
Yeah, and it also begs the question, why does Thor have to have a placeholder? Can't Thor just go to the Elder Sleep without anyone having to waltz around, you know, under incognito? It's just bizarre, but at the same time, I like the story. I really liked it, and I like where he took it.
Yes,
but it was,
yes.
It was very weird because it's something that I totally did not expect, so... And I think he kind of did a little bit of that Venom stuff you didn't expect. You're like, huh, that's different.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly creative, it's inventive, and it's well told.
Yes.
So points on all of that. And if I put aside the I don't think Donald Blake should be this other thing, although it's got to be for this story, you know, and if I could just deal with that or whatever, which, you know, I did is going through it, then the decision to have him go insane... You know, not really crazy about that, not digging the new look here at the end, but, you know, it fits. And then, man, the way they end the issue with Blake essentially almost doing the fool me once, you know, kind of a thing, we're not going to go down that path again, ended on a very powerful, you know, symbolic moment there.
Very symbolic, and I thought that was just pretty amazing, because that was how this change happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so, boom. Basically, Donald Blake's gone mad at this time.
I think he's been insane for a little while now. It's just, yeah. He's closing the door on some stuff by breaking the cane.
Never again. And it makes you question, you know, if you were stuck in a place and you didn't know much about yourself or why you're there or what's going on. He was created and he's just wandering and it doesn't change. You could see how it can make someone insane if you take that as a separate person. And so he's literally gone mad at this point.
Well, and over the course of the story, they explain the kind of chain of events that have already happened that facilitated him going insane and some of that other stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought they over the course of the story, played fair with all of that. I just don't know that I buy, you know, Donald Blake being this other thing than Thor.
I know. I don't buy it, but apparently that's what it is now.
Well, if you're going to do it well. And, you know, he did.
He did it well. He did it very well. And I'll tell you what, the next issue, I liked how it opened.
Mm-hmm.
Where he's literally going through a book and we're almost getting, you know, callbacks or looks at different Thors. You know, you read Norville,
got Thunderstrike. Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot more characters that we see pop up because part of him being angry and filled with his hatred, he feels like he's been imprisoned, and he blames Odin, he blames Thor, and he has a hatred towards anything with the Odin force.
Can't say that I blame him.
Can't say that I do, and he is on a mission to get some vengeance.
What I like about that whole scene, though, is there's also, on some of the pages, you know, some Easter eggs with the armor and all the other stuff in the background.
Yes, it's coming to play.
You know, we've got the Destroyer armor there, which is just huge in comparison to Blake.
Yep.
And just, again, some fun moments.
Very fun. I really liked it. I thought it was super, really cool, and it just got me ready for more of it. I opened up, I'm like, I'm ready to go.
Got some great fight scenes here. Again, spending a little more time on Asgard than I'd prefer, but they use the Asgardians well.
Yeah. The Asgardians are basically standing up to Blake, but Blake's no pushover at this point.
Well, and his use of a scalpel's pretty severe.
Yeah.
And that scene where he's ripping the Thor out of Beta Ray Bill, I mean, totally unexpected, but man, what a great visual and what a great moment.
Yeah, that was really cool. I thought the art was really cool in that, just seeing him change and no more Thor's, and you can literally see him absorbing the power right at that mm-hmm. point. And so it's almost like the Highlander as he's fighting and taking out these characters with this Odin power, Odin force, he's absorbing it and getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of Highlander in there, I like that.
Well, and it makes sense. And again, they've set up kind of the mythology and stuff like that. They've created their rules and they're playing by them.
Yeah, really cool.
And the whole bit of he remembers all of Thor's experience, which to me, again, goes against, but he's a different entity, but he's not, kind of confusion. The whole bit of I fought all of you before and you've never fought me. Kind of cool.
Very cool. And there was just so many cool moments in that fight scene when the axe is getting thrown at Sif.
Mm-hmm.
You see Beta Ray grab it, and you're just like, oh yeah, here we go. But it was just all around terrific. But to see where the Asgardians ended up was very surprising, I would say.
Yeah. The whole bit of basically, okay, you all are getting booted out of Asgard and wind up in this, you know, hellscape or whatever. Definitely interesting moment. Again, fun stuff, a lot of action, a lot of adventure, and some good character moments.
Very good character moments. And when we get the dragon, finding out how it kind of started.
Mm-hmm.
With Donald Blake becoming as strong as he is, and the way that this issue ended was really kind of surprising. Or not, I wouldn't say surprising, but interesting.
Yeah, and this is one where it's halfway between a reveal and a cliffhanger for me.
Exactly. We know as readers where Jane was before, but Donald Blake does not.
Well, and it's one of those things that it can't, I mean, at this point, I didn't know what Blake had planned for Foster, but I knew it wasn't going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, so this is the kind of thing that her not having really her own title right now. I mean, yeah, there's the Mighty Valkyries and stuff, but that's a team book.
Yeah.
You know, if it was Jane Foster Valkyrie still going on, I wouldn't be too worried about her.
Yeah, but with that not going on, they could replace her pretty easy.
But yeah, that was a fun moment. And again, ties into the history of the characters because Jane and Donald Blake, they go back to like the start of Thor.
Yeah.
So again, respect for the history of the characters. I love it.
Yeah. And now once again, when we go into the next issue, I love the way that it opened because it's literally just Blake and Jane having dinner, but they're showing him eat, you know, a steak and just eating the red meat and stuff. It almost looks like a serial killer at that point.
Yeah, I definitely think that was the vibe they were going for.
Yeah, it was. So you're on edge as soon as you start reading the book. I love that.
Well, and again, we've already seen him last issue, you know, take out pretty much all of Asgard.
Yep.
So, yeah, not looking too good for her.
Nope, not at all.
And the whole way the discussion kind of went was interesting. I think the part that threw me at first during the meal, they seem to be at a fancy restaurant.
Yeah.
And it looks like she's eating a hamburger.
Yeah, it does.
I got nothing against hamburgers. It just didn't seem like what she would necessarily have been eating at that kind of a place.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
And it looks like she's still in her scrubs from the morgue.
Yeah, he's dressed in a suit. She's wearing her scrubs eating a hamburger. Very bizarre, now that you say it. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I'm sorry. If I'm the guy at the Mater D station or whatever, and somebody comes in with scrubs, even if I don't know they're working in the morgue, and certainly if I do, this is the time, hey, we do have a dress code here, and I don't care what the dress code is. It's no scrubs from the morgue, at the very least.
Exactly. Take a shower and change.
So that just seemed a little odd.
It did.
But it's like, hey, what the hell?
Yeah.
When we got some of the stuff with the rat thing or whatever with Thor.
Yeah.
You know, and they're calling back to, like, Squirrel Girl and stuff like this. And I'm like, you know, I've probably read that Squirrel Girl issue, actually.
Yeah, I didn't remember the character, honestly.
No. It probably looked different over there anyways.
Yeah, the squirrel character from Asgard or whatever. And then they show the people in, I guess, Hell, we should say. I don't know what it is.
I forget which realm it was exactly.
But yeah.
The Dimension Blood, I think, is what they call it. Basically, it's a hellscape of some sort.
Volstagg getting down, eating the meat down there.
Does this surprise you?
No, it does not. It's just kind of funny.
I don't know, though. If you're in a hellscape or whatever, I don't know that you should be eating there. So in some places, once you've done that, I think you're stuck there. I don't know.
Yeah, I would be too concerned. But I'll tell you what, the book got back on track for me was when they started showing him eating dinner again.
Mm-hmm.
At least this time she's using a fork, so whatever she's eating. It looks like a salad now at this point. And she does the reveal, you know, when I was Thor. And he literally loses his mind almost at that point.
Yeah, that part threw me a little bit because while it was a really great sequence, I'm like, after a page or two, I guess it didn't happen?
Yeah, it's almost that I was reading a book, for the life of me, I can't remember, Nailbiter. And in Nailbiter, that would happen too. People were going crazy, becoming serial killers, and there's this one girl. And she'd get to like she's walking into the police, you know, the local police place, and she's like talking to him. And she's imagining killing everyone, but she doesn't really do it. It's kind of like that. He's imagining because he's got all this rage. He's a serial killer doing it, but I didn't do it. And we saw that. I'm trying to remember what the name of the show was, but it was about a mass murder. It was a television series about the guy who was in Silence of the Lambs. I can't remember. Lecter, Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah.
There was a TV series on that, and he would have that. He'd have these, you know, imagine doing things, but he didn't do it yet. He was just imagining what he would do.
Right. I guess for me, the way that works in a story is if the narration of the story is following that character solely.
Yeah.
So we're kind of along for his ride.
Yeah.
Whereas we just cut away to the hellscape with the Asgardians and stuff. So we're not tied to Don's story here.
Correct.
So when I get to this two-page splash and he's ripping the Thor and the Valkyrie out of her.
We're thinking it really happened at that point.
Well, yeah, I got no reason to think it wasn't happening.
Yeah, correct.
So, you know, great visual and stuff, and then immediately undercut on the next page.
Correct.
So I was a little, I don't want to say annoyed or whatever there, but it's like you're backpedaling.
Yeah. Did you like the next scene where basically Jane's in the bathroom and you kind of see her power with being able to see the, almost like a skull bubble of people's head when they're getting ready to die?
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty interesting, but I was more taken by what kind of caused her to rush in there to essentially go throw up. And that was the reveal of Red Norval.
Yeah, Red Norval, yeah.
And again, they'd given us the thematic kind of touch point on the last story. When we're going through the pages of the book and stuff, we actually got his name and stuff, so we knew he was a previous holder of the Thor power.
Yep.
And this goes back to, you know, Donald Blake liking Jane, essentially, which is kind of why he spared her so far.
Correct.
Because, yeah, Red Norval I don't think is coming back from this.
I don't think he's coming back either. I think that's the last we'll see of that character.
Well, you know, it's actually funny, because her being a Valkyrie and stuff, we could see him in the afterlife, and they could figure a way to get him back.
That is true.
Don't know that they need to.
But they could.
They could.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I love the ending to this issue, too, with what happened.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. What I loved about it was they'd already set up with Beta Ray Bill, oh, we could just get Lockjaw, he'll get us out of here. And he's like, nope, he came, he went, he's, yeah, that ship has sailed. And then at the end, to not only get him, but this other reveal, I'm like, man, they're pulling out all the stops and going for, in some cases, some fairly old school references. And again, not something I expected to see here.
You almost feel excited when you see that. You're like, wow, that's kind of cool. And so I remember the first time I read that issue, I got to the end, I was like, oh man, this is getting good.
Well, it certainly has the air of anything can happen.
Exactly. You don't know what to expect. It's kind of like most of the time when we're reading comics today, you or I, we read a book, and we've read a lot of comics. You kind of know what's going to happen. Not exactly. There's a twist or turn here. But here, they're pulling out so much stuff, I don't know what to expect issue to issue, which was kind of cool.
Well, I mean, when you're decades in on a property like Thor, you've got a fairly wide established canvas and cast of characters that you can play with.
Yeah.
And there's the risk of going back to the well on certain ones too many times or whatever. But then there's also moments like this where it's, you know what, we haven't used this one in a while and makes sense to use here. Let's you know, pull it out and see what the fans think. And again, it shows the reality of the world to a large extent.
Exactly. Yeah. Really cool. And once again, you know, what was weird is, okay, we get that reveal, but then immediately when you're reading the next issue, I remember that scene. It jogged my memory. It's like, oh, yeah.
I will say I didn't care for the opening page of that next issue.
I would imagine you would not. It's a frog being dissected.
Yeah. Did not care for that. And particularly where we left off with another frog. It's like, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, this eventually this frog's going to meet his end, but not today.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, the fight scene that they had there was just really cool. Because there was a few times, you know, like, where the frog's just giving it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see him literally grab him and then shove him in his mouth, like, shoves him in his mouth, it's like, oh, that's the end of him? That was kind of gruesome, but that was really clever how that played out.
Yeah, well, what I also liked through that whole sequence was he's got the sword that's allowing him to control the Rainbow Bridge.
Yep.
And he's using that to essentially teleport from place to place as Lockjaw is following him from place to place.
Yeah, Lockjaw's totally involved in the fight, biting him on the arm and everything.
But we're really going cool. From one alien planet to another, to the pyramids and back and forth. It's just a ton of fun there.
Yeah, really cool.
And the use of the inset panels of, okay, first Blake goes, then, you know, Lockjaw follows. Ton of fun.
Yeah, this was one of the more fun fight scenes. I thought it was really clever, really good. I mean, I'm looking at Lockjaw clamping onto his arm right now, onto Donald Blake's arm. Super funny. But, you know, from hitting him in the face and everything like that, I thought it was going to be the end, but it was not. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. When we then cut to Jane and we see, you know, Throg, the Thor frog, you know, it's like, yeah, run. It's like, okay, this isn't going to go well.
Yeah, that's when I felt sad. And then you saw Lockjaw. I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, and pulling Doctor Strange into the whole mess.
Yeah, Doctor Strange. It was really weird because I guess it was a callback to when he had taken on the Odin Force when he had fought Loki. And I had really honestly forgot about that. But when they talked about it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Again, great respect for continuity and what's gone before.
Yep. If he wouldn't have said that, I was like, oh, yeah, now I remember that fight. And then, but then we get to see Jane turn into the Valkyrie here, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed like he didn't want to, Donald Blake didn't want to go there, so it ended the fight quickly.
Yeah, I thought the whole bit, again, ton of fun. And then when we get a little bit of the, here's how come Doctor Strange getting pulled into this with the, you know, footnote back to his title and such. Again, they're playing fair, they're keeping it accessible. And it doesn't feel like you've got to have a PhD in Marvel history to understand the story, but that they give you what you need as you go, and that they've certainly got that PhD in the history and are really reaping the rewards of it.
Correct. And then Donna Blake's going after the Tree of Life, I guess. Is it Yggdrasil? I don't know how you say it.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Ah, that works. Whatever that tree is called.
It's like, can I buy a vowel?
Yeah, I can never say any of those words. It's horrible.
That's one of the reasons I have problems when they get a little too Asgardian and stuff on here. It's like, I can't even pronounce some of the names.
Yeah, I can't either. But I'll tell you what, I did like the reveal at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was, once again, pretty cool. I'm glad to see the character. I was excited and ready to read the next issue.
Yeah. This just had some fun moments. I liked when they brought in, you know, Mr. Horse and stuff and had a little bit of back and forth between him and Lockjaw and stuff.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Just some fun character moments, good story. Again, good respect for the reader and the characters and just the history that we've all been through within.
And it feels like Donny Cates is just having a lot of fun as he's writing this, just having a blast.
Sure hope so.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like work. It feels like he's playing when I'm reading his story. I mean, it's written well. It's not written poorly or loosely, but it just, when I read his work, I can tell he's having fun as he's writing it.
Yeah. Well, and having fun as we're reading it, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm having a blast. As you can tell, every time we do the monthly spotlight, I'm always like, Thor was awesome, but I'm not going to tell you anything because we're going to review it. My review every month. It's awesome.
No, and I can totally see why you love the title. It's doing some interesting stuff. It is charting new ground. Again, I question the decision to go this way with Donald Blake, but the payoff's totally worth it. And not just for this story, but it is clearly set up for future stories to be told off of this.
Yeah, correct. He made it new and fresh without creating a new character, which is kind of cool. You know, we've seen writers do that, but it's really cool. But he kind of did create a new character a little bit.
I was going to say, he kind of did, and that's kind of my problem.
Yeah, there's a new character.
But where they go with all of the, again, we're getting a fun story here that plays off of what he's already done, as well as literally decades of history of Thor and other characters, and is setting the groundwork for a ton of future, potentially really great stories to be told. That, to me, is good storytelling.
Very good storytelling. So I thought it was just very clever, really good.
I did like the sequence of pages where we start with Odin and then, you know, just see him in that same basic pose for quite some time in a number of different settings.
Yeah, basically showing how his life has gone south.
Yeah,
He's lost his wife, he's lost his power, he's lost everything, and he's basically become, I guess, a drunkard in a bar. He's just drinking his depression away.
Yeah, definitely.
Kind of sad, and I thought it was kind of funny. I wouldn't say funny, but interesting. Jane wallops him, you know, like, what are you doing? You know, punches him. And then she's like, wait a minute, why are you so weak? Why am I able to hit you and you're laying on the floor? And he's like, well, you know, I've given Thor my powers. You know, I'm not the king anymore.
Well, and I like, oh, Thor can take care of himself. And she explains the situation. It's like, okay, I'll come.
Yeah, that'll do. I'll get my armor. That was really, really clever.
Yeah. Well, and then when we get back to where the Asgardians and Doctor Strange is kind of coming in with his crew of Lockjaw and Throg and stuff, he brought his ghost dog that I don't think we'd seen last issue.
Yeah, I don't remember the ghost dog being seen. I forget his name, but yeah, he's there now. So we have all the dogs. You have Thori, you have Lockjaw, and the ghost dog, which I can't remember.
Yeah. I thought that whole bit was just kind of funny.
Yeah, kind of cool. But now we're basically going to get all the Asgardians.
Including Loki.
Including Loki, Doctor Strange, you're going to have Jane Foster, and they're all going to see, and Odin, and they're all going to see Don Blake and take care of business.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool, really clever, and how they all kind of stand there, and I thought the armor on Odin looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cool.
It's funny, it looks, and maybe it's just the pose he's in on that splash page. I almost want to say Michael Avon Oeming. It's got that kind of a look to it.
It really does, now that you say it. Very cool.
And I'm not entirely sure what it is about it that makes me think that artist, but yeah.
Yeah, I like it, though. It looked really good.
Yeah, nice, imposing figure, yeah.
Now, the one thing that I like, so he's been hacking away at this tree, and basically we got this orange ooze, this sap, or the life of the Odin force and all the power coming out of the tree, and it was just really cool. He's like, when Odin says, where do you think it's all bleeding to? Because Thor is down below in the other world and basically dripping and it's oozing on him and he's becoming almost more powerful.
Yeah.
More and more powerful. And I thought that was really clever.
Well, and going with the world tree as kind of the anchor between the realms and stuff in some way, shape, or form. So when Thor's blasting from below and winds up, you know, hitting a Blake there and stuff, it's cool, it's fun, and then using the ravens to kind of get Thor out of where he's at, but not quite.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool, because Thor is essentially trapped. He cannot get out of this world, but the ravens can take your soul.
Well, and Thor found a nice kind of workaround, escape clause, whatever you want to call it, to get back into the fight.
I love that. So that was really cool, because when you see that action sequence happen at the end, you see the big boom and you see all that stuff happening. I remember reading that, I'm like, what in the heck? And then you turn the page, you're like, whoa, you know, just that wow moment, boom.
And again, foreshadowed earlier on.
Foreshadowed earlier on, and yet with the first time through, you won't expect it, but you go back and you see that, you're like, ah. It was there all along.
And there are some writers that are basically winging it, and month to month they're trying to figure it out as they go. And there are others that have a fairly meticulous plan, so they know where it's going to end before they start. And there's also some that are a little bit in between. They know the broad brush strokes, so they can plant the seeds and stuff, but they also can, you know, tweak it as they go. And Donnie Cates is somewhere between that meticulous planner and maybe tweaking a little as he goes, but he's certainly not just winging it issue to issue and whatnot.
No, with all that foreshadowing with what he's done, he definitely has a plan. So I think that's really cool. But like you said, I do think he's able to wing it a little bit in there. And I think that's what makes his work feel a little fresh, maybe a little cool, yeah. Modern.
He's certainly not a slave to his plan, but he's certainly got a plan.
Definitely. That's a perfect way to describe it.
And there have been some other writers that I've really enjoyed that have flat out said, yeah, I'd work myself into a corner every month that I didn't know how to get out of, because I figured if I didn't know how, the reader certainly couldn't either.
Yeah, that's not good.
It can work if you've got a really good writer who's kind of lucky and doesn't work himself too badly into a corner.
Yeah.
But there are other times where you then get the cop-out, you know, opening on the next issue. Oh, yeah, wasn't that big of a deal. It's like, do that too often and you lose the readers.
Yeah, then we won't be reading your work.
Yeah. And then, yeah, we get this last issue where they kind of, you know, hit the climax of the story.
That fight scene is really cool. And then I was kind of, okay, the way that Odin handled the ending is the way I expect Odin to handle it. And then the way that Thor handled the ending is actually probably the way you would expect Thor to handle it. But at the same time, I was a little frustrated by it. But it played out really cool.
Yeah, there was some stuff where Odin was trying to play his old role.
Yeah.
And was schooled by a couple of people in different ways. Beta Ray's like, nope, you know, I'm going to step in here. And Thor's like, hey, you're not king. I am.
Yeah.
And then the way Blake gets dealt with.
Wow.
There's the line of, we're brothers. You know, I'm not going to kill you, but I may rough you up.
Exactly. And then there's basically a huge status quo change for Loki in this. So Loki doesn't want to be, you know, the god of lies. He wants to be the god of, I can't remember
stories.
What he said. Stories. But we need a god of lies. And the way that this all played out, I thought that was so cool. And it was like the ending that just seeing that the chirping of the fangs
mm-hmm.
was just so, oh man, just wow.
The whole ending there, and then the reveal that Loki has renounced that title, given it to Blake, and we now have a new god of lies, and that this Donald Blake character is not going anywhere.
Yeah. To be continued, basically. We will see him again.
We have to.
We have to. And so we have a new god of lies and someone who has an axe to grind with basically all of Asgard now and every Asgardian character and Doctor Strange. And the Valkyries. So I think this was really, really cool. And just so many changes in here. It's just kind of like, wow. It not only was a fun story to read, so much has changed. But if you miss this, I think if you read the title 2 or 3 years from now, you'd be like, what's going on? Makes no sense.
Well, particularly if you got to the point where this Don Blake is the God of Lies comes back. And you're like, wait, I thought Loki was the God of Lies. I thought Don Blake was Thor's alter ego. You know, yeah, you could be totally lost. But whenever they do that, I hope, for the level of accessibility in that story that we got here.
Yeah. Yeah, I would hope so, too. But I thought this was fantastic storytelling. I mean, you may not like what happened with the creation of Donald Blake as we know him now, but I thought he did it very clever. I thought the most important thing was the book is fun. I have a lot of fun, and every time I get it, it's one of the first books I want to read. You know, there's Department of Truth. There's Thor. It's one of those top of the pile books that I'm like, man, I want to read this and see what's going on.
I can totally understand that. I think it's, in terms of execution, really well done.
Yeah.
But I look at this, and this is very different than those first 6 issues we read.
Very different.
And it makes me wonder, well, what's going to happen after this?
Yeah, because you really don't know. I don't know.
So, I mean, both stories are great, they're just very different, and I don't know what direction this title is going in. It's like the compass is spinning, it stops for a second, goes for an arc, and then spins again. And what I loved about this is this shows what really great kind of a story you can tell when you embrace continuity, because this story would not have worked without the history of these characters.
Correct. It really would not have.
Yeah, that history is continuity.
Yeah, the continuity made this work. You mm-hmm. couldn't have just pulled out, you know, Throg and whoever, you know, Thunderstrike. I mean, even when he was just a reference, or Red Norville, or Jane Foster, the Valkyries, without all that stuff having been built before. You wouldn't just create these things new in a story. So that's all been established before. He respected what came before, tapped into it, and brought forward and brought it to life.
And that's a good way to phrase that. Because while this could be the first story somebody read, it would not have been the first story somebody wrote.
Correct.
You know, and to me, that's... It just illustrates how continuity isn't inherently a bad thing.
No, I think it's a good thing. If this would have been Donny Cates Thor and he had ignored Jason Aaron and Walt Simonson and Lee and every writer that came before, he probably wouldn't have been tapping into the characters that we have in here. This Donald Blake would have been in this, and it probably would have been ho-hum, and it would have taken him years to build something, a tapestry this rich. So the richness was there. He tapped into it and built this really cool, fun story by respecting what it came before. Super cool.
Well, and if he hadn't had Beta Ray Bill, Throg, and all of these callbacks and the respect of the history, the decision to retcon Don Blake the way they did probably wouldn't have gone over well.
Yeah, it would have gone over really poorly.
I mean, the concern I've got is we've now got a God of Lies that's essentially the evil version of Thor.
Yeah.
And the whole opposite number thing, we've been there and done that with tons of characters. So I don't know they needed to go this way here, but, you know, all of that aside, they went this way, and they went down this path really well, even if it's not necessarily one that I think was the best route to go. We at least got a hell of a great story out of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I was just looking just for the heck of it. The editor on this book was Will Moss, and C.D. Cebulski's the editor-in-chief. But, you know, hats off to them for letting the writers run a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there was definitely editing going on here. They were checking and, you know, dotting the I's and crossing the T's and making sure that everything, I guess, was true to the continuity that came before. So I think there's a good job on the editing side, too. So great job, Donny Cates, and good job, editors. Great art. Fun title, and if you haven't read it, you're missing out, honestly.
I totally would agree with that. I think it's solidly done. I think they could have sold the existence of Don Blake a little bit better than they did.
Yeah.
But, again, it's not like they're trying to disregard everything that's gone before or anything of the sort. It's the complete opposite. They're really embracing it and having fun with it while respecting it.
Yeah. And there's only one sad note about this entire story, and that's that we didn't gain a new reader in John Mayall.
Well, I mean, maybe we'll come back and do another back issue spotlight. I just don't know that I feel the need to be putting it on my monthly reading list, because I don't know how well this would have worked for me over the span of, you know, 5-6 months.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, if it's still really good, we'll revisit it in the future.
That's fair. Totally game for that.
It was
an enjoyable read.
Yeah.
But it's based on this and not knowing. I mean, they end on a moment that they could go literally anywhere in the next issue.
Anywhere just, at all.
Just like the whole Herald of Galactus thing came before this and isn't referenced here at all.
Yep.
And that's the thing that I think is preventing me from saying, you know what, I should get on this title.
Yeah. That makes sense. So I'll tell you what, I'll keep you posted on how it's going in our monthly spotlights.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Please do.
And I'm glad we got a chance to do this because I had a lot of fun reading it. I'm glad that I got to share it with you.
Yeah, ton of fun. I can totally see why you like it and stuff. I think Donny Cates is very talented and doing a great job here. And I'm curious how long of a game plan he's got and how long he'll have to let it play out.
Yeah, fingers crossed a long time because I'm having a blast.
I think they've got the right creative team on this book, and if they can keep it going, they definitely should for the long haul.
Yeah. One change up in the book, I think I heard with issue 15 that there'll be a new artist that I guess the artist had gotten a little bit behind, so no big deal for me, but the artist may be changing, but I'm okay with that.
That's not too surprising.
Yeah.
That happens. It's a lot of work to do one of these books.
I mean, there was a lot of detail in the drawing. I honestly can't imagine drawing 30 pages or 22 pages of art every month. I'd probably go into burnout.
I can't imagine doing it. That's mainly because I can't draw.
I can't draw either.
I had that ability surgically removed at a young age. It's just not there.
I'll tell you what, though. I see these guys at, like, conventions and stuff drawing, doing their commissions. You know, you can walk up and see them doing their...
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, that takes forever. There's no way in heck I'd be doing that for 22 pages, month in and month out. I would be so tired. But and they're professionals, you know. They're good at it. So my hat's off to all the artists.
Well, yeah. I mean, they got to spend, you know, about a day on one of these pages. It doesn't just, you know, come straight out.
Yeah. And it's focus. It's a lot of focus and a lot of cramped fingers, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the physical drawing part. In addition, there's the, here's the script I got. I got to go break it down, figure out where the panels are going to be, what angle do I want to use, what's the right dramatic moment for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's quite a bit of time and energy that goes in. So a lot of what we liked about this was not just Donny Cates, but the artist correctly getting that onto the page.
Yep. And the art in these issues was fantastic.
Yeah.
So, great job.
Definitely some good stuff.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Nah, that does it for me.
Cool. The June previews came out on May 26th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 163 is the morning of Saturday, June 5th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. And a quick reminder that we've also got the recommendation roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something. Let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes. The way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books, anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting, like the streaming services and stuff like that, on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.